Good morning to everyone. My name is Stefano Gobbi. I'm a PhD student with University of Trento and Fondazione Edmund Mach in Italy. And today I will present the free and open software for geography application part of my PhD study and perform the most difficult task in the world of taking my time and be on schedule. We will have a brief introduction about what we are studying and why we are studying this kind of issue in Trentino or Provincia di Trento. Then we will see the materials and the methods we are using, which is the most ambitious part of the program and the presentation. And then we will have a quick glimpse about the partial result we have achieved in these 2 years of my PhD and a quicker glimpse on the partial conclusion we arrived. So our aim in this project is to study the landscape changes. And landscape changes in a region like Trentino occurs between open areas, pastures, and forests. And why is important? Because forests are not only the lungs of our world, but they regulate the water cycle that provides shelter to animals and to us, that provide timbers, and they provide a lot of other ecosystem services which are fundamental for life, especially in the mountains. So as it states here from an article from my supervisor of some years ago, a deep understanding of the forest path dynamics is crucial to know the conservation of the mountain areas and to trace a possible evolution of the forest behavior, especially in those areas where there is a strong link between forest management and biodiversity. Monitoring landscape is quite an interesting issue, and if you try to type landscape change in some research engine, they will give you a lot of results. And how has been tackled this analysis? Well, especially with aerial images, maps, and other things from the past. So trying to trace temporal evolution. And then the results of this land use analysis are summarized in landscape metrics, which are simply numbers which can help us to trace the evolution of the landscape change. Why is undergoing these changes? Well, technically, just because of human intervention, because as in the past, the principal activity in the mountains was agricultural and pasture. Now, the population has moved into the cities, and lands in the high mountain have been abandoned, and so forests are now taking over the open areas. With a little help from climate change, which allowed the forest to move higher on the mountains. So the current study is trying to apply a well-known procedure from the literature to a very fine scale and into a very large area. Here we have a quick overview of the study area that I was talking about, which is Trentino, a region in the north part of Italy, mostly covered by mountains, so which mountains are covered by the exceeding of 60% by forest, and we have also a lot of habitat in Natura 2000 network. So, now we'll see some materials and methods. As they were previously saying, your software is beautiful, but is useless without data. So the data we are using are a lot of data. The first of the data in the time series is the 1959 cadastral maps, which were firstly made by the Habsburgic Empire in order to control and to cadastre the whole territory of their peripheral region. In fact, these maps are the same here in Trentino as they are in Czech Republic, in Poland, I think, in Hungary, and in all the neighbors of the Habsburgic Empire. They are cadastral, so each parcel is colored by a background color. And for instance, here you can see a particular of Trento city. And the gray area that you see, the gray spot that you can see here, is usually indicates a forest. So this forest is still here in Trento city. Now, of course, the city has expanded, but the forest is still here. Then we have, in 1930, the Italian Kingdom Forestry Map, which are also a sort of cadastral map. Here, the ambitious project by Mussolini was to map all the forests in Italy, and they managed to do that at a larger scale. The previous scale was very detailed. This one is a scale about 1 to 100,000. And the background color here indicates a type of forest, so pine forest, chestnut forest, beech forest, and so on. The other background color, the white background color, we are not really interested in it. Then we move to the 1950s, when we have the first aerial images. This one were taken just right after, before the war. And for Trentino, we have to overcome the first problem with GRASS-GIS, which is the orthorectification of this whole data set, because these images are taken and just left there to take dust in some archive. We retrieve them, and we had to digitalize them first and then orthorectify them. Then we have the 1973 aerial images, which Markus Nettler, a lot of years ago, orthorectified. The 1994 aerial imagery, and then we start with the series of colored aerial images, which the 2006 and 2015 aerial imagery. The software used were, first of all, QGIS, which I think it needs no presentation, and as well, GRASS-GIS. I don't think it needs any presentation. As I was saying earlier, the first problem we have to overcome was the orthorectification of the 1954 dataset, which has been performed with two different versions of GRASS-GIS, the 6.4 and the 7.4. Orthorectifying means to transform a flat image, which has its own reference system, into a reference system with a datum. And in the process, the image will be curved and adapted to a digital elevation model of the territory it depicts. So the steps that we take to orthorectify an image are, first of all, set a target location, which means assigning to the first image a reference system, then select a digital elevation model, then input a bunch of information from the camera which took the photo in the first place, and then the I/O, which is not input-output, but is internal orientation of the image, which means translating from a pixel reference system to a meter reference system. Then input some ground control points, which is the part which required the use of GRASS 6.4 and GRASS 7.4. In the 7.4, the user interface was more usable and more accessible. And it permits to zoom in real time, to input and cancel the ground control points, which are points of known coordinates in both that needs orthorectification and another reference and already rectified images. And I was saying these ground control points in the 7.4, we were able to change them, adapt them, and zoom in real time and cancel the ground control point if we knew that it was wrong and was going to make wrong all the process. And then after the process of ground control point assessment, which is iterative, meaning that we obtain an error for each ground control point, and when we see that the error, we continue to input ground control point until the error is low enough that we can accept this error to be in the orthorectified images. After that process, GrassJS with the i.rectifive module can perform the actual orthorectification. The orthorectification, which is performed by solving this collinearity equation, which are just two equations with a set of six incognita. So the solving of this equation is not perfect. There is to be an error, which is why I was telling that the process of inputting ground control points is iterative. Then, after all the dataset we are using is auto-rectified, which means that now we can use them in a reference system, is the turn to perform the land use land classification. And this was performed by using an object-based image approach. That's because the resolution of our images, as we will see in a slide a little bit later, is so that each pixel can represent, each object is represented by, represented on the maps here, is represented by a set of pixels. Here we have a quick overview on the steps that we were able to automatize using Python, which is, first of all, we used i.segment to segment and generate the object on the maps. With the help of r.texture, the segmented maps was inputted to i.segment.stats, which generates a bunch of statistics about each segment, which are geometrical statistics and radiometrical statistics. And then the segmented map was inputted to a machine learning process, which is a module called v.class.mlr. The training areas, which means the objects which are belonging to some specific land use class, were inputted by hand on just one map, and just by using this map of training areas, we were able to automatize this whole process for the whole map of a single temporal dataset. So, for instance, in the maps of 2006, we have one training max for the whole set of images, and so on for the others, for the other set of temporal set of images. Here we can see a quick overview of how it works. So, this is the original images. Then you can see the segmented images, the vectorialization of the segmented images with the whole set of parameters, and then the machine learning classification. And with the maps of the 1859 cadastre, the approach was slightly different, and that's just a matter of time and computational power and computational time, because as you will see, these maps are like a lot more than the others, and we didn't have enough computational time to perform an object image classification upon them, because they detail. And so, as you can see here, we proceeded to by hand with the vectorialization from QGIS to classify the areas we are interested in, or the open areas, the forests, and the wooded pasture, which is like something in between, a situation in between forests and open areas. What saves your life in this process is the snapping tool and the other automatic CAD tools, advanced CAD tools in QGIS, which allows to digitalize contiguous area in such a way that there are no overlapping, no island, nothing in between an area and another contiguous area, which saves literally your life when you are performing further analysis on segmented vectorial images. So all this input data, all these images, contributes to trace the landscape change analysis in province of Trento. And as you can see here, these are the dimension and the number of images. The Austrian cadastral map is a mistake, misses a one in front of a five. So they were 15,000 file, and that's why we didn't have enough time to process the image with an object-based approach. So very quickly, here are some results. First of all, with the help of GRASS 6.4 and 7.4, we were able to obtain a complete orthorectification of the 1954 dataset. And this paper, which was published in the last year proceedings of the Phosphorgia DAR, explains a little bit more in details, and a more detailed paper is on the way to be published and submitted. The mean overall error, which I was talking about, is about 9.8 meters for the all images. This is just a statistic, it's not, as all the statistic is not quite reliable, but if we want to trace a mean, it's about 10 meters of error for each image. And this is, was considered acceptable for our purpose, for the purposes of our study. Can we improve the results? Of course we can. For instance, we can use the digital elevation model with a more refined grid. And for instance, as you can see here, with the 10 by 10 meter resolution of the digital elevation models, there is a step area which is not recognizable even by human eye. Using the 1 by 1 meter resolution dam, we can see that the situation improves, and what was like a blurred shade now becomes like a valley bottom in some part of the park of Dolomiti of Paneveggio here. The map of the 1859 was completely digitalized using QGIS. And these are some statistics about the situation, how it was in 1859. And then an example of the result of the classification with Obia. Here I carefully selected a detail which can show how is the level of detail that can be reached with the object image, the object-based approach. As you can see, roads are clearly visible and classified correctly. And here is an abandoned cave which has been classified as road, which, I mean, it's quite correct. Not correct, but quite. And then the algorithm has perfectly discriminated between what are trees and what are open areas, as is possible to see in the big area above. And you can ask, well, this approach of using just one trainer map for each temporal dataset will affect the results. It will, but we can control how it will affect the result. As you can see, the red and yellow column represent the Cohen's kappa coefficient for the maximum likelihood and the SMAP approach. And using the same training areas with two different maps lowers the accuracy on the maximum likelihood and the SMAP approach, while it's more stable using other approach, which are all machine SMVS, WVAB, and so on. All the others are machine learning approach on object-based image. So I think we can fairly say that we can control how the accuracy will work out for the whole dataset. So, for concluding, GRASS-GIS was used in every step of this research and will continue to be used in the further step of our research. GRASS-GIS and QGIS were able to manage quite easily, I should say, the diversity of the input data, so between black and white images, colored images, and maps. The problem related to orthorectification was then easily solved by using GRASS-GIS and on to recurring to some more complicated software like MicMac, or I can't remember the name of the actual software, sorry. The OBI approach was easily coded in 140 lines of code in Python, obviously, which were used to analyze the whole dataset. QGIS provided to be a fast tool for visualizing and man-checking all the results we had. And the, as I was saying earlier, the QGIS of tools of, for digitalizing prevented a lot of topological errors and speeded up the analysis of the 1959 dataset. Prediction will be made for the evolution in the Forest of Trento using the... I'm out of time. Okay, sorry. But this is just a presentation of the possible outcome of our research and the future of our research. So I finished. If you have any question, I'm here for you. Thank you.
Presentation, and I hope some that you have some questions. Perfect.
So I have two questions. One, how did you calibrate the segmentation algorithm?
What parameters did you use?
The second question is the code that you described for running the OGA accessible?
Okay, then the first question. The segmentation was optimized using another module of GRASS, which I forgot to add there, but there is this module called i.segment.uspo, which perform a segmentation of a small subset of your image. And then it has a bunch of output. It gives you some output number, basically. If the output number is zero, the parameter you're using are completely wrong. If it's one, the parameter you're using could be okay. It's not that they are okay. They could be okay. But then this poses another problem. Which subset of my image should I use? And the problem is solved by simply watching at your image and selecting an area which is pretty segmented. For instance, an area between a forest and a city where you have a lot of trees and then houses, roads, and so on, which are different objects, all one contiguous to the other. So by using the algorithm, the module i.segment.uspo, you should be fairly confident in an area like this. You should be fairly confident that the parameter that you find here are okay for the whole image. You are fairly confident. And then, yes, answering to your second question, the Python code that I used will be available in GRASS Git as we overcome some problem of optimization, because now it's brutally hard-coded. We have an idea, we came with the idea, and my PhD is like a continuous work in progress. So I'm trying to work out a way to optimize this code and making it accessible for your GRASS user. Okay.
You said there were 15,000 files, and it seems a lot. And also the processing time, like on order of, what was the processing time?
The digitalization of the cadastral maps were undertook in a month and a half, something like that. And the segmentation part, which excludes all the other steps which need to be undertook, took like an hour and a half for each image, a little bit more if you count that as you can see. As you can see, there are these black band on the image, which crashes the i.segment module. Because they are not null, they are zero, and the i.segment doesn't like that.
Okay.